AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
R&B money. We up. Tank. Jay Valentine. We are the authorities on all things R&B.
What's going on? It's your boy Tank. This is Mr. Valentine. I'm
Am
announcing.
I Mr. Valentine, or I'm the Valentine.
You are the Valentine. Sometimes you Mr. Valentine.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
But we're gonna go with the Valentine today.
Yeah.
And this is the R&B Money Podcast, the authority on all things R&B.
Yeah.
Listen.
Yeah.
Let me pause for a second. The Valentine. I feel like, you know, I always do the intros. You know, the intros is my place. That's why I do the intro.
Okay.
But I feel like this is your intro. I feel like you should handle this one. This was, you know,
I got you.
Yeah, come on.
Because today.
Yeah, talk about today.
We went back to the essence. Right? We went back to where this whole R&B money thing started. Now, R&B music might have been around, but they wasn't getting to the money. So today, on the R&B Money Podcast, we have Sir. Capital S, capital I, capital R, Ray Parker Jr., the Ghostbuster himself.
Come on now.
In the building.
I don't hear it.
In the building.
I don't hear it. My God.
Yeah.
Sir.
Yeah.
Just happened Sunday night.
Yeah.
Two nights ago. That's why I looked at Jay. I said, hey, that's Sir Ray Parker to you now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm going to respect it.
But can you just, before we dive back into the archives, can you give us, like, how do you become Sir?
Well, hell if I know. I had a neighbor who was a guy, and he knew the Prince of Spain, and the next thing, you know, I guess the two of them were talking about, you know, he lived down there, and they thought I was worthy. You know, they had to check my background, make sure I ain't done no
problem. I mean, they already knew what was up because of the neighborhood, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Catch that part, though. I had a neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we know where you live.
So we had to check, you know, they did check me out, make sure I didn't have done no deeds, you know, wrong deeds and all that stuff, and you were their royalty. And they said, well, he'd be a good guy to have in the order, you know, the royal order.
In the royal order.
The royal order, yeah.
Yeah. What you know about that?
The royal order?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Hey, about I'm a black guy from Detroit. I mean, I'm as far away from the royal order as you can get.
I watched the Game of Thrones.
So you think it's Game of Thrones?
I've seen the Game of Thrones, yeah. So I know it's got something to do with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Vikings is a good show.
Yeah.
There's a royal order on there.
Yeah.
But you're part of the royal order in 2022.
Yeah.
So that means when it all goes down, you're going to get one of them phone calls. You're protected.
Oh, yeah.
And they have sovereignty. Yeah, exactly. So I was about to say, they have sovereign nation. So I may get dual citizenship. I may have a second citizenship. We give you some tax advantages. And there's some other things that can go along with this. I'm just learning.
So, yeah. So we spoke about, you know, your sovereignty.
Yeah.
You being Sir Ray from now on. They can't call you nothing else.
Yeah.
But let's go back, because this is the R&B Money podcast. Yeah. We like our podcast to be informative. It's funny. And, you know, we want to tell real stories.
Yeah.
And we want people to have an understanding of where the music truly comes from.
Yeah.
So from my understanding, it's Motown. Am I right?
Well,
am I kind of right?
It's sort of kind of right. Okay. I wouldn't say it came from Motown.
Okay.
But Motown obviously played a big part in my career. Music started for me at 6 years old. I didn't want to dance with the girls in gym class. They had us doing some kind of dance in elementary school. If you can remember being 5 or 6, I remember that. And we had to switch girls. And I was like, I don't like this girl thing with, you know, switching partners. So I went to the principal of the school at 6 years old and told the principal I wasn't happy with the curriculum. Yeah. And so she paused for about 5-10 minutes. Like, you gotta be kidding me. Little kids coming in my office to the principal's office, you know.
You don't like
it. I don't like the curriculum. Right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't like it.
I don't like it. I ain't feeling it, you know. So she took me to a music class. Of which, when I got there, I didn't know what a music class was, by the way. So it's not like I wanted to play an instrument. I didn't even know what that meant. But when I got there, my best friend Ollie Brown and Nathan Watts were already there. And by the way, they're still musicians to today. So remember those names because it's relevant.
Absolutely.
And so the teacher looked at me and says, what instrument do you want to play? I wanted to play the flute because you got to carry the instrument home. And I didn't want to take the tuba home. It's too heavy.
Yeah.
So I picked the clarinet. And I became very good at the clarinet. I didn't care, but the teacher was so motivating. My elementary school teacher was everything to me, you know. And he was so motivating that he put the three of us best friends together and formed a band and called the band the Stingrays.
At six.
Now, what was interesting about that, he named the band after me, put Stingrays with R-A-Y in it. The other two guys, they didn't know they just got screwed already. You know, 6 years ago, they hadn't even figured out yet that their deal got stumped. They didn't figure out. The name band was named after me, and they just got screwed. So they didn't do that. And so we did that for a while. Then when I got older, about 11 years old, my brother had a little cheap guitar, and I started playing the guitar. Now, the guitar for me was, like, magical. It was like the clarinet, I was working at it. Mm-hmm. Everything else, I was working at it. But somehow they put the guitar in my hand. It was like, yeah, God just blessed me. This is it. This is where I am.
Yeah.
And then I broke my leg at 11, so I practiced all day, every day. And to make this story shorter for you, by the time I was 13, I was on tour with the Spinners.
What?
Yeah. So then by the time I was 14 and a half, then I started on Motown. I started working with Marvin Gaye, Gladys Knight, Smokey Robinson. I was in the studio with all the guys.
So you were the Doogie Howser of music.
Yeah. Whoever that is, yeah.
You don't know
who I know Doogie. I'm just messing with you. All right, yeah.
But, 14?
Yeah, so I got it going. And by 15, I was pretty much financially independent by 15. And my dad swore I was selling drugs or doing something.
Right. So, I mean, you're from Detroit.
Yeah, exactly. So he went to my cousin and said, you go follow him around. There's no way in the world that kid can make that much money playing the guitar. And he's only 15 years old. And so my cousin followed me around. I didn't know why he was hanging with me. I was like, he was older cousin. I was like, he ain't never hung with me before. Why you hanging with me now? You know. But he was trying to figure out what I was doing.
Right.
And he had to go back and report. Well, you know, Ray ain't really going to class. He's skipping school, but he is playing music, you know. Because the sessions were going on in the daytime. I wasn't going to school. I'm going to play at Motown. What did I go to school for?
Yeah.
You know, and I was working with Holland Dozier Holland when they separated from Motown because they couldn't use the Funk Brothers, which was the Motown band.
Yes.
So they ended up using me at Holland Dozier Holland on all their records. So I was doing that
and
2-3 days
a week.
15. So back then, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but it was at the time. We could make $100 playing 3 hours, every 3 hours. So I could do that three times a week. I was playing at a club called the 20 Grand, which was the famous club. It's like Cotton Club in Harlem. All the big bands, Smokey Robinson would come there, Glass 90 Pips. I was making $350 a week there. And then I do Jewish bar mitzvahs and weddings. And I can make another $35, dollars a trip. And so I can make like $700-800 a week. Now you got to understand, a brand new Lincoln Continental is only $5,000 back then.
What?
So you got a picture.
I need five of those. So now.
So like you look at your car and say, oh, I only got to work 2-3 weeks and I got the whole car. You know, and I'm like young. It wasn't nothing I could buy except a bicycle for $50. Right, that was it. Right. And all the time I had, there was 1 month I worked with Marvin Gaye at a studio all month at 50. I think I was 16 then. And I made $18,000 for the month. That's more money than my father made all year working at Ford. You got to kind of get into that and get a picture of that.
Yeah. Where were you putting
it? Hold on, can we say something? Mm-hmm.
Were you holding in his cash? Or you holding back in cash?
Can I ask this question?
Go ahead.
You worked with Marvin Gaye. You were working with Marvin for a month. What did that entail? Was it just session work or were you able to input?
Oh, yeah, That working with Marvin Gaye was the most fun I had at that age because he would let us write songs with him. In fact, there's an album that came out last year called Funky Town or something, and it's the unfinished tracks that Marvin never finished singing. He says my name on the record, Wawa's name on the record, and Bohannon's name on the record, and all our names on, we all got co-writers on all the songs. And so what it would be is we go all day in the studio, Golden World, we record with Marvin, then we go over Marvin's house and listen to tapes. Now, I'm the youngest one there, so I'm sitting at the tape recorder. They're telling me, load the 7.5-inch tape, put the tape recorder in. And that was the first time I saw a rack of Macintosh amps and Tannoy speakers. His house sounded better than the studio.
Yeah.
And I'm too young to figure. I don't know. We just kick in Marvin's house. You go to Marvin's house every day. I mean, that's no big deal, And Marvin liked to smoke a little weed from time to time. So my favorite story, they were doing a documentary one time on Marvin. They were interviewing me because I'm on his greatest hits and a bunch of other stuff. And so he was smoking a little weed and he looked over at me and he went, this kid's underage, he ain't got a driver's license yet. So he just looked at me, he says, man, why don't you take my car and go for, go get lost for a couple hours, Now I'm still getting paid, but he gave me the car. Now the car he had, if you saw the car in Superfly, the bug-eyed Cadillac with the things, Marvin had a burgundy when it was cold-blooded, right? Threw me the keys, I didn't have a driver's license. Me, I get in the car, man, I'm in this $50,000 Cadillac. Man, I'm leaning over to me in the mirror. My head's under the mirror like this. And I went to my high school, rolling. Because you got to go somewhere.
You got to go to the high school.
You got to go somewhere.
And I'm looking at all my boys. Then it occurs to me, can't let these guys get that close to me. Man, they going to hop in the car. Man, I just burned rubber and left off. But they were like, was that Reagan? That Brad was, So I thought that was the most exciting thing. And I told that story in this documentary. Yeah. They took me out the whole documentary. Because I told the story.
In the podcast now.
They said they wanted to hear about the real deal.
Yeah, the real.
And I gave them the real deal. And then they kicked me out the whole documentary for that. So I was like, okay. But Marvin was the coolest guy. He was a great football player. They were going to sign him to the Detroit Lions.
So he, no, because I think I heard that he tried out for the Redskins.
He was with Lynn Barney all the time. We'll come to the studio.
Okay.
So they were going to sign him to the Detroit Lions, but he had to say that he wasn't going on tour for X amount of time, and he didn't want to do that.
He was
going to
really get a real NFL look.
No, I heard it was a receiver, right?
Yeah, something, yeah. But I was too young to know who he was. But he was also a great boxer, by the way.
Mom had the hands, too.
Oh, Marvin, you messed with Marvin's woman. He was punching
you
guys out.
You messed with his woman. That's a first thing.
Guys out. Literally punching guys out.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so Marvin, you don't mess with
talking
Marvin.
About.
He's a heavyweight boxer.
You don't play with Marvin.
Yeah, you don't play around Marvin. You know. When he said all the records with Jan, Jan say hello to you. Don't talk to me, Because Marvin would knock you out. But he was a wonderful guy. Just a great human being, wonderful guy.
It's been one of my idols.
Yeah.
So you've been around all of them. Because the other person I wanted to ask you about, Barry White.
No, Barry White was one of our closest friends, Barry White, man, Barry comes from Houston, Texas, and grew up here in Compton and stuff. So he's sort of a roughneck kind of guy.
Yeah.
But I like those kind of guys because I grew up in Detroit. And so we sort of identified each other. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first met Barry White, Gene Page invited me to the studio, and he had speakers up really, really loud, jamming. You'd be like going like this. Got his diamonds on here. Diamonds. He's doing that way before the rappers. He had all these bling out. Yeah, yeah. Oh, he was bling bling out. Yeah. Yellow suit. You know, he's like, and he's sitting around like that. And I had an idea for a song, and me from Detroit, I'm like, well, how do I get this guy's attention? And I would never do this now. I'm way too refined and, you know, been living here for too long. But at that time, I went and hit stop on the button. Stopped his music. He turned around, looked. He looked in the back. What the? What's he, you know, going on? And I got a big afro, and I've got my shirt, I got my little tank top on. It says, I'm a fucking genius on the shirt. So I'm trying to, hey, I'm not hiding myself. I mean, I'm feeling over. I may be a little overconfident. People weren't saying he was the most modest guy in the world. So, I mean, I had it going. And then he looked back. And before he could, like, shoot me or kick me out, he says, well, then get in there and play it then, you know. So I went in and worked on one of his earlier albums. And I played the line. And I thought he's going to back up and let me play it all the way down.
Yeah.
He came on the speaker and said, keep playing like that, you know. And so on the actual record that I did, there's like two bars where I'm not even playing. Right, because that's him saying keep playing, and he just kept the whole thing and just played it, and we were good ever since. Yeah, and then we had other things that were, you know, his thing was that he had 10 writers signed to him. He says, but nobody gets a song on Barry White, no way, no how. And he had Love Unlimited, then he had Love Unlimited Orchestra. So the first thing I did is I conned him into getting me a song on Love Unlimited. You know, Love Unlimited.
Because he used to write them all himself.
Oh yeah, he write them all himself. So I conned him into getting me one on Love Unlimited Orchestra.
That's how I be conning him.
He's gonna feel this in a minute. Yeah.
He's very white.
So I had him. I had Gene Page was doing the charts, the famous arranger. He was my buddy. So Gene had done the charts for me, all the stuff. So when I pushed Barry, and by the way, Barry White, if he pays all triple scale, and if you were done with the music early, you can go home. You still get paid.
Yeah.
So we were done one day early, and I waited to that day. I had the music ready. I had all the stuff ready. And then, he was in my car, which he cut his arm, sitting in a little Mercedes convertible. That wasn't a good idea. But I played him the music. He was like, yeah, that's nice, Ray. Okay, I'm going home. I said, so why don't you let me cut this song? He says, well, we're finished. The musicians are going home. It said, you ain't got no charts. You got that? I said, I got the charts. I got everything. I said, why don't you just go home? I'll be there in like half an hour. Don't worry about that stuff. So I talked to all the guys in the band.
Yeah.
Cut the track. He put it on the record. 100% my song on the album.
No way.
But I wasn't satisfied with that, which everybody else said, man, we thought he was going to kill. No, I want a song on Barry White that I wrote, that he wrote together, and the whole thing. So his manager lived upstairs with me on Olive Drive. Shaka Khan lived next door here. Barry White lived upstairs. I wrote this tune for Barry White called You Got the Love, right? He wouldn't record it. I let Stevie hear it. He wouldn't record it. So I cut it on Shaka Khan. We had number one record.
On Rufus
and Shaka Khan, called You Got the Love.
Yeah, yeah.
Rufus and Shaka Khan. So now I'm getting a little more respect from Barry White even. You know, it's like, that little kid, that little punk kid wrote a hit song. What the heck is going on? You know, and that's what they call me, little punk kid, you know, because you're a little snotty-nosed punk kid, talks too much, wears too much flashy stuff. So, you know, Barry White comes over to the apartment building because his road manager lived upstairs. And he's Barry White, so he's parking wherever he wants. He parks his car right where the gate thing is.
So can't nobody get in or out?
Can't nobody get in or out. So me, not thinking about that, all I'm thinking about is I want him to cut my song.
Yeah.
So I get in my car, I go get it, put the cassette in the car, and I'm going to blast it. And I drive around, then I trigger the thing and go, oops. And he's got his white Mark III, and the gate comes.
His car.
It lifted the front of his car up off the ground. And then the car was heavier than the gate, so the gate fell off the thing and then crashed on top of his car.
And for the people that's watching, I don't know if y'all know, but in R&B music, Barry White is probably top two gangsters of all time. Probably not number two.
He's probably not number two.
Real gangster.
Yeah.
Real gangster.
So he looked at me, he said, thanks, Ray, I needed that. You know, and his car's all tore up. I said, yeah, but man, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. White, but you gotta listen to this song. So I play him the song. Believe it or not, I actually play him the song. Then I give him a copy of the song. He wrote the lyrics to it. And that song is called You See the Trouble With Me. We sold 6 million records.
Wow.
It's on all
it paid for the call.
And all of his writers were like, But you told us nobody gets a song with Barry White. No way, no how. Nobody's writing a song with Barry White. And I'm like, oh, I got me a song 50-50 with Barry White. Yeah, so that's it. Yeah.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah. So that was great. Yeah. We're now, by the way, business-wise, I wanted to publish it, but I couldn't get the publisher. Barry White said, you ain't getting the publisher. Yeah.
And nobody got publishing, though.
Yeah.
Nobody got published.
No, not at that, no. And at that time in your career, and I like to tell new people too, mm-hmm. sometimes you got to give up some stuff that you normally wouldn't give up later.
Yeah.
You know, once you become Stevie Wonder, you ain't got to do none of that. You know, but in the beginning, you might have to give up a little bit to get something, you know.
Exactly.
And having a cut on Barry White at that time was very significant, you know. So I went through and did that one. And was happy I did. Made a lot of money. You know.
I'm going to go mess up his car, man, and see if I can get
on his, drop the gate.
On his, see if I can get on
insurance
his.
I got on that?
Do whatever you want to.
That's right,
Do whatever you want.
Your question, what color do I want?
Man, what? No rebuttal from
me. So this fool here.
Yeah.
This is a segue to our next thing.
Yeah,
this fool here just did an interview. And he says, because, listen, you here now, and you somebody that can either confirm or deny this.
Yeah.
This fool gonna get on an interview and say that Stevie Wonder can see a little bit.
No, he can't see.
This fool right here. Talking about Stevie Wonder can see a little bit.
Can he? Me and Stevie Wonder were boys. I mean, we were like more than just working together.
Can he feel see?
No, no.
What does feel see?
Like, could he stay in a lane while driving, if you coached him?
Yes. And we did that.
Huh? You did what?
I let Stevie Wonder drive.
You have to tell us how that plays out, because you're still here.
First.
I'm still here.
But I mean, back in the day, you know, but this is before, you know, this all the Detroit bodyguards. And no, this is here.
This is L.A., though.
This
okay
is L.A.
Okay.
Yeah, but this is after I quit the band, too. I mean, I'd already quit the band. And I'm out here, and he's out here. And you still go pick him up all the time. We and him go hang out. We go girls' houses and just do some crazy stuff, you know.
Me and Stevie.
Yeah, me and Stevie.
Okay.
We were kicking him like
I got to. Man, you got to hurry up and become Stevie so I can have that kind of talk, man.
He's killing us right now.
Shit.
So there, if you go down, I think San Vicente, wherever it ends, somewhere near Pico or something, it goes way down there.
Yes.
There was a May company or a big department store or something down there, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Stevie thought we were on La Cienega or something. And he wanted to drive, so I put him in the car. And I told him, when we get to the light, you're going to do this and that. But we really were in the parking lot of May company at like 2 in the morning. Wasn't nobody there, right?
You sick.
I know you can't see it.
You sick.
Yeah, Stevie, we're at the beach.
Yeah, we're at the beach.
You feel the breeze, baby?
Oh, my God. So he wanted to drive. He's really good at driving. But I said, okay, when I say left, you go left. When I say stop, you stop. When I go right, you go right. And so he did it. You know, we were good. He didn't hit nothing. I mean, we had a lot of space in the front. Yeah, but we had a lot of space, yeah. But still, my heart was beating a little bit, you know. And, you know.
Did you at some point tell him you finessed them? No. He's going
to
find out.
No, we got a bunch of other crazy stuff we did, too. But, you know, we don't need to.
Oh, man.
We don't need to confess to everything.
No.
But, no, he can drive. He's good at it. You know. In fact, when he did that, what is it, James Corman show or whatever, you know, where they put you in the car with the
Where they singing.
I thought he was going to drive. I was like, watch, any minute now, Stevie's going to drive. And they were in there singing, and at the end of the show, he didn't drive. I was like,
That would have been the bar.
I was 100% sure they're going to mess up the world because Stevie's going to start driving. And that's going to be it. You know, if I had known James Corden, then I would have said, man, let Stevie drive. They'll tell your show would be number one.
Oh, in the world.
In the world, right? Just let Stevie drive. Let Stevie drive. Yeah.
I don't know what to say after that. I don't even know what to say after that.
But no, he can't see, but I'll tell you this, you wouldn't know it.
No, of course, yes.
He's incredible. I mean, when I got in the band, man, I remember he got into an argument with the drummer. And I don't know why, man, the drummer, by the way, Stevie, at those days, he's only a few years older than me, so he was young. He was built, ripped, buffed. these push-ups and the whole thing. And the drummer got an attitude and said, man, I'm tired of Stevie. Put a blindfold on me. I'm going to fight Stevie. I'm thinking, this is not a good idea. This is just not a good idea.
Hold on. Hey, put a blindfold on Stevie.
The drum. This is the way I got
me, so I can fight Stevie Wonder.
This is the way I got my best friend, Ollie Brown, in the band from Detroit. Man. I figured if the drummer's gone, then I can get my guy in. But it wasn't that. It was like, here's the moment.
The drummer's getting ready.
You
want to fight Stevie, don't you?
I got the blindfold on me. Yeah. Let's get it.
Yeah, I put the blindfold on him. And we put the blindfold on the drummer, and they're going to duke it out. And you should have seen the guy. The guy, man, is doing like this. He's trying to find Stevie. And every time he went, bam! I mean, it was like just punch. I mean, straight punch. We just went on for a couple of minutes, and we threw the towel. We were like, you got to stop. Stevie was killing him. Oh, Stevie was beating him down.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks,
Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
I don't think he got one punch on Stevie. And every time he, bam! You know, yes,
because he could hear it.
Heightened.
And
he was hitting the guy so fast. And it was just like, this ain't no fight. This ain't a fair. Toe in the towel. Like Rocky. Toe in the towel.
At some point, I took off the blindfold.
And how about this? If he took the blindfold off, he may still have gotten
the same ass whooping.
Yeah, he would have probably got it because Stevie was ripped. He was built.
That's right. Stevie beating niggas up, man.
You are killing me right now.
Yeah. Get a drummer, son.
Got a whole new meaning. Are you kidding me?
No, we had a lot of fun. Stevie's a nice cat. He's a wonderful guy.
I sat next to Stevie and we sang and played together one night.
Wow. Super. So you got a picture. If I'm 18, he's 21.
Oh, y'all can't.
And he's the boss.
Yeah. At 21.
Yeah, so who's controlling this stuff? I mean, we got the boss is just as crazy as the rest of us doing it. And you know how you are at 19, 20. I mean, it's that kind of crazy. So I go pick him up. We go drive around. We do crazy stuff, you know. Girls, I mean, we're just doing whatever.
So how old are you when you moved to L.A.?
I was 19.
Okay.
Yeah, just turning 19. It may have been 18, but just turning 19. Because I got with Stevie in the Rolling Stones when he called me. I was 7.
And Rolling Stones?
Yeah, well, see, this is a great story because I'm in college, which I hated, and I got to college early, so I'm 17 in college. And they're making me draft car parts and all that stuff. All I want to do is drive the car. I don't want to build no car. You know what I mean? I'm just not feeling it. But my dad worked at Ford for 48 years. And he's like, son, you got to get a white collar job, pension, retirement, you know.
After you're making $18,000 in a month.
Oh, yeah, it's way past that, yeah. Okay. So now I'm 17.
Yeah, I don't think that'll work.
Yeah, I'm 17. That ain't going to work. So I'm 17, and I'm in the lunchroom with some friends of mine. And I'll never forget, they looked at me and they said, we're tired of hearing about you and Smokey Robinson. If you knew Marvin Gaye, you wouldn't be sitting here with us. Right? And I looked at the guy and said, that's the first thing anybody said to me that made any sense. Watch this. Take my books. And I just walked out the lunchroom, never to return. So I went home, talked to my dad. And Stevie Wonder had called just then. And I'll never forget when he called me, Music From My Mind was my favorite album of all time. I mean, I never heard those new sounds. That was the first time anybody heard synthesized bass. And,
yeah.
You got to remember, Stevie started all that stuff. I mean, so when you heard it in your car, you just went, is it good? Is it bad? I don't even know what it is. I never heard it before. Yeah. It's like you just never heard it before. What's that? What's all these sounds, you know? Mm-hmm. And he had the voices with the sound. So the only album I had in my car was Music From My Mind. So when he called me up and he needed a guitar player, I guess everybody he said everybody he spoke to said, call Ray. You know, call this kid, Ray Parker Jr. So he called me up. The first thing I did was hang up on him, you know, click.
You thought it was.
You know, I thought, ain't no Stevie want to call me. It's one of my friends. And, you know, then he called a couple. He called a couple of times back. Then I hung up. Now, I think the third time, I put some four-letter words in and then hung up. You know, it wasn't pretty. You know, it was bad. So he called back again and said, man, I don't think we feeling each other. let me play you a little bit. And he played me the rhythm track, The Superstition. He was working. I was like, holy crap, man, fucking tongue. I'm on Stevie Wonder. I mean, I got to correct this. And so he asked me to go on tour with him and the Rolling Stones. They were doing that. And that's the biggest tour of the year at that time. There was nothing bigger than the Rolling Stones and Stevie Wonder together. I mean, this is going to be stadium tour, everything sold out, limousines, tear gas, you know, the whole mass hysteria, British
tear
invasion.
Gas.
It was that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah. You got to back them up.
Right. So it was crazy. I mean, it was like, you know. But so I told him, first I got to talk to my dad, you know, because I'm respectful of my parents. And my dad was crying. He was like, son, I've been saving money for you to go to college since before you were born, you know. And I was like, yeah, but I don't want to do that. I want to go with the rock and roll band. You know, so we headed out. You know, and I repeated back to my dad. And very respectfully, after about 2 days, he gave up. You know, he said, I can't do nothing with this poor kid. He's going down. You know, he's going to make $25 a night. I said, I don't think so, Dad. I'm going to do a little better than that. You know,
right.
And so I went on that tour, and that was a life changer for me. That was the big eye opener, life change, because everything I did was in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time I got to see the rest of the world and see what everybody else on
at 18.
At 18, what everybody else was doing, you know. And it just opened my eyes to everything. I mean, I didn't know what no publishing and no writing songs or producing. I didn't know what none of this stuff was. Right. I didn't even know what it was. I just wanted to play the guitar.
So did you have any form of representation at all? I was just you and
no.
your dad.
No, wasn't none of
the only person you just had to talk to was Pops.
Exactly.
Can I go?
Yeah, exactly. And my dad was pretty smart, by the way, especially mm-hmm. with money. My dad, I'll never forget, even when we were younger, he used to, there were no calculators and computers, but he used to make me amortize the mortgage and figure out each payment, which is difficult.
Yeah.
Because the interest rate, once you make a payment last month, it's a different payment the next one.
Yeah.
Between the principal mm-hmm. and the interest mm-hmm. each month. The payment is the same, but the balance is different.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I had to figure that out at like 11 years old.
Oh, so he was setting you up.
Yeah, he was setting me up. Yeah. So my dad had some great ideas. Some of them I should have listened to a little more, you know.
Right.
Especially with the girls and accountants and a bunch of other
stuff. Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Yeah, my dad.
We're going to get to that.
My dad would look at the dollar bill, and his thing was this. See that? Which is what it says. It says, in God you trust. You know, in God we trust. My dad would say, now, if you trust anybody else, it says right here who to trust. Yeah. He says, if you trust anybody other than God,
you're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. You're in trouble.
And later in life, I found out, boy, he's really right. We pay attention to this. He should have put some red marks beside that.
I say it by my mama all the time.
Yeah, right.
I'd be mad when something she say from 10 years ago. Yeah. I'd be like, you know what? She told me that was going to happen.
Yeah, she told me. I heard this story.
Yeah. So you go on tour with Stevie.
Yeah, and the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Biggest tour in the world, tear gas, limousines, and we, you know, the other things that I'm sure was
there too. Oh my gosh, we can't even get into that.
We don't take too long. Yeah, we don't have to.
A little more X-rated.
So you said at this point, you don't know publishing, you don't know none of these things.
No.
When did you start being like the sought after songwriter?
Yeah, but that took a while, by the way. That came after the Barry White stuff. After You Got the Love. And I'll tell you exactly when it really flipped for me in a big way, you know, where things changed. I wrote this tune called You Make Me Feel Like Dancing.
Okay.
You make me feel like dancing. It won the Grammy Song of the Year.
You don't have to sing it.
Yeah.
We know.
Well, here's what's bad about it. My name ain't on the song nowhere, and I got no credit. I got completely screwed. Should have been millions of dollars. I got nothing. And not only did I write the song at home, and bring it in. The producer did me in, by the way. And I mean, I thought he was my boy because I had my name on the sign. He was bringing me fresh cut watermelon juice every day. And he just did me in. Big time did me in. Not only did I write the song at home, but I mean, that's me playing on the record. Right. I put the band together. So there's no question of what happened.
Everybody you wrote and produced the record.
Oh, I wrote and put the band in it. You can call it producing. Yeah, pretty much. And so the good news to that is, that's like me being the basketball player, winning the series, and I ain't got no deal. I wasn't signed to anybody.
Right.
So Clive Davis liked this song I had called Jack and Jill, which I'd also given to the same guy who stole the other song.
Because, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Not to cut you off, but in this business, right, when you link in with somebody and you believe that they're your in to things, you kind of give them whatever the best of you.
Yeah.
So, like you said, he had already stolen one.
Yeah.
But you were giving him another.
Yeah. Well, I'd already given him that at the same time before he stole.
Oh, so this was part of the batch.
Don't think I gave him the second one after.
Okay. No. Because some people do, and that's why I wanted to say that.
Yeah. And so when Clive Davis got wind of it, I think I was like 21 or 22 years old. He says, get me this Ray Parker guy. Here he got a little studio in his house. You know, he's got all the stuff going on. He's written these songs. Just bring him to me. You know, so I got to him. And what was nice about it, I'm like an athlete now who don't have no deal. I'm out in the street.
Yeah, you're a free agent.
So my first deal was like somebody else's second record deal.
Mm. Gotcha.
Because he's like, well, he's already proved himself. He did this, and this, and we're going to do this. He said, don't worry about the other guy. He says, don't worry. Don't even call him to tell him he ain't got the other song no more. He says, I'll do that. He says, I'm your divorce attorney.
Wow.
He says, I'll take care of all that. He says, all I want you to do is cut Jack and Jill for me. He says, you worry about the music. I got the rest of it. Yeah. And he did. And we've cut like Davis. 7, 8
goals. Shout out to Clive Davis.
Shout out to Clive Davis.
This is Clive Davis. Yeah. Clive Davis going.
Shout out to Clive Davis.
I just went to his 90th birthday party a month ago. And he's a wonderful guy. Aretha Franklin says he's a wonderful guy. He is a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
In the music business, he's the guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you've heard that before, probably. Yeah. But he's the man.
Done work with him.
He's the man. He's the man. Yeah. Okay. There you go. Yeah. He's the man. So he's a really good guy. And he took good care of me, and the rest is history after that.
So then you
paid, got the money.
Yeah.
Got the right lawyer, the right stuff going on. And
you're 21, around 21, 22.
Yeah, 21, 22, yeah.
So you got, okay. So
that was a big change for me because, and we're skipping over this, so let's not. But when I got to L.A., I became one of the top session guys. Mm-hmm. So what you got to picture is I'm making, just playing the guitar, not writing songs, $250,000 a year. In 1974.
As a session player.
Yeah.
A lot of people that's going to be tuning in may not even know what a session player is anymore.
A session player is a guy who plays on
They just
on
find it
records.
In the computer now.
Exactly.
Right.
But I'm the guy who's playing on Seals and Crofts, Tom Jones, Engelbert Humperdinck, The Carpenters, and
you're
all that.
Playing guitar on all these
records. Playing guitar on all this stuff, yeah. Uh-huh. And then more. And so for just playing the guitar, right, in those days, I'm making like 200 plus grand. To give you some idea of what that is, you could buy a house in Truesdale for $350.
Them houses is...
And I'm making $200.
Them houses is crazy now.
Okay, so you got to get a picture in your mind. If I work for 2 years, I can buy a house in Truesdale. Right. That's how much money that was back then. It's like millions, you know, over $1 million a year, just playing the guitar. And nobody even knows who I am. I haven't done anything yet. So I did that, and the big flip came, and I'll give you the numbers. When I turned 23, that's the first time I hit over a million. But I went to like 2.2 million that year. And that was a lot of money back then. Yeah. And
this is the 70s.
This is in the 70s.
Oh, my God.
So since this is a money show, it's important to say that because if I knew what I knew now, I would have kept all the real estate I bought, all the stuff I bought. I didn't know that much about stock market. I should have been investing in that. I could be worth $1 billion. I could see the billion easy from then to now, but I didn't know what I was doing. I'm buying cars and having a good time.
Right, you living. Living.
But I could have done the living too and still done the other stuff. I just didn't know about it. I come from Detroit, the inner city. Nobody in my family even knew what a mortgage was, but you know, sort of back then.
You were
my
first generation.
Yeah, I'm first generation. So you learn a lot of stuff later. Then you look back at the money and go, well, I thought that was a little bit of money. That was a lot of money. I could have bought the whole area. If I came to the Valley, I could have bought the whole block for that back then. You know, houses were like 35, 40, 50 grand. In the Valley. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And that's one thing I learned is true. I regret every piece of real estate I sold. I regret just about every stock I've ever sold. No matter how
high. You just wish you would have held on to everything.
Mm-hmm. I wish I would have held on to everything. I could have been super rich just holding on to everything.
Yeah.
Like every time I sold a property for 3-4 times, the one I bought in next near Lamont Doja, I think we paid, me and my best friend Ollie, we bought it when we were teenagers for like 105 grand. It was Dusty Springfield's house, the singer. Bought her house. Man, we sold that house for 430 grand. We thought we robbed the bank.
Killed them.
Yeah, I'm calling people in Detroit. Now? Man, that house is worth $3-4 million. Nah, maybe more.
Right.
Maybe more, you know.
Right.
And so I wish I kept every house, you know. And so when you look at it now, you say, man, I paid this. And you think, I paid a little bit too much. I mean, they really bent me over a little bit. Later, man, that's just going to be chump change, you know.
Right.
It's just the way of things. People told me that in the day, but I mean, I didn't really see it, you know.
Right.
To me, I looked at a house on Sunset Plaza Drive that was 45 grand. I ain't paying no 45 grand for no house. Are you crazy?
Sunset 45
grand.
Plaza.
Now you pay 45 grand for the parking space.
Easy.
You know
easy. You'd have had one of those sitting.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You know.
Sheesh. I think that's also in our community and amongst our people, with everything that's going on, with everything that we go through in life, mm-hmm. I think a lot of the younger guys, younger than even us, they don't even see that far.
Yeah.
They don't see reaching 65, reaching 70 years old, still being in good shape, still moving around, still living your life good. They're like, I don't know what's going on tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and get this.
Yeah, yeah, do this now, yeah.
Right. Which, like you said, you can do that and still, you can put the money up, set yourself up and still live.
Yeah, and still live. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think guys start to think, that they, you know, they're going to take away from how much fun.
It's not going to take away from how much fun you got. And then at the same time, nobody needs 13 of the same car either. These guys go out and buy 13 Ferraris, yo.
I used to think I needed 4 or 5 cars. Yeah, I had them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But I mean, I'm reading about guys who buy 13. They got way more than 4 or 5 cars, but they got 13 of the same car.
Yeah.
I'd be like, why'd you buy 13?
It's crazy. I was talking to your nephew. I'm talking to Jordan because he wants to get a car. He was talking about, I was going to hook him up with my guys, you know, to get him a car. And I'm like, well, what do you want to do? He's like, well, you know, I just want to get something nice. You know, I pull up and I said, I get it. I said, but think about this. All the cool things you've been able to do up until this point, you've done without a car.
Yeah.
You've done without this crazy $1,000 overhead. Right. Like when you walk into a place, your car don't go with you.
No.
I said, you pull up in an Uber, walk in there, and what happens? He said, I'm lit. I said, so let's just, we ain't got to go crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Get something cool, get something nice. I said, you're the bar. Yeah. It's you.
Yeah.
They want to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have one car now. Mm-hmm. I've graduated to a point. I've elevated my thinking.
I think it's that awfully nice car.
It's nice. Don't get me wrong.
It's 10 of the layman cars.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, right. It's nice.
But it's one. Yeah, I come from laying in the back of the hatchback of a Pinto.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, there you go.
That's where I come from.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, not getting the new pair of shoes until my foot was out of the shoe.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Okay. You understand what I'm saying? So certain parts, certain things for me are triggers.
Yeah. You're making up for lost time.
I'm making up for lost time, baby.
But and let me tell you, one car is fine. And I'm going to give you an example. This is what I tell my kids. Like back in the day, I lived in Beverly Hills. I think I was 24, 25. And I was 24. I know it was because I had a Rolls Royce. I had a Rolls Royce, I had a Porsche, I had a Jeep, and I had a Honda, something like that. And I'll never forget, when I made the big money, I wanted to buy a Rolls Royce convertible because Sly and the Family Stone had one on his album cover. I just got to have a Rolls Royce convertible. I got to be driving the street in a Rolls Royce convertible. It was important to me. Yes. Now I'm like, what was so important about that? But it was important at the time. Yeah, I had to do it.
And it was a driver. It was a driver. It was something
I'm 23 years old.
That made you work hard.
I can get this.
23 years old. Get me a Rolls Royce Corniche convertible.
It's
definitely
a floss.
And I'll never forget, the car at that time was $107,000. Now, so I made that first money, Jack and Jill, the album, radio albums hit. And I first passed $1 million. For the first time in my life, I got the money. Not my accountant, lawyer. They all divvying it up. Okay, you got to pay all your bills, pay your manager, pay your accountant, pay your lawyer, pay all the bills, pay your taxes. Mm-hmm. Got to pay your taxes. Mm-hmm. I'm paying all my taxes. And I had enough money left. I got my mom and dad a house, and I upgraded my house. And I had this money left, and I'll never forget, my lawyer said, man, he said, you like Sly so much, I got this whole catalog you can buy for $450,000. And I was like, what am I going to do with them old songs, you know, just being uneducated.
Oh, my God.
I'm like,
dance
to the music, everyday people, what am I?
My heart.
For $450,000. And so I said, I got to get my mom a house. That's it. And then there was so much money left. Yeah, I wasn't thinking of finance. I just said, man, I got to get my Rolls Royce. Don't y'all mess up the budget with my Rolls Royce. And I'll never forget, my lawyer looking at me and says, well, can't you use these songs? He says, you know, we were both young. He said, you know, people are buying, publishing now. They, you know, maybe they some value to it. But it was so early. Nobody was doing that yet, you know. And I said, man, skip that publishing deal. I'm with my Rolls Royce convertible, right? And so in hindsight, now we're going to go in hindsight, which is always.
Always 2020.
Always
2020.
Okay, so in hindsight, Frankie Crocker of WBLS, which is the biggest station in New York, I passed him on La Siena. He took my music off the air for a year and a half in New York. So I got no airplay in New York. Now, luckily for me, I was selling so many records, I was going to go and plant them anyway. But I know I felt that miss in the New York. What was that? $70 a million or plus, because I had no airplay in New York for a year and a half because he was pissed. Don Cornelius saw me drive and I passed him. And they'll give you that look like.
So the Rolls Royce is making them feel this way.
Yeah. Oh, they liked me until they saw me rolling down the Rolls Royce, and they're in the Rolls Royce. They looked at me like this. When I went Frankie Crocker, who I thought we were boys. I mean, I played his concerts for him for free and, you know, all the other stuff. Man, when he saw me pulling in the road, he looked at me like this. I knew I was in trouble when he looked at me like this. He folded his arms at the red light and went like that, you know. And I, just the way he looked at me, I knew I was in trouble. You know what I mean? I was like, I never heard. Clive Davis called me and said, what did you do, bang his wife or something? He said, I can't buy your music on the radio. He said, they won't even take the money to put you on the radio.
Oh, my God.
He said, what did you do? And I went, I know what happened. I saw it in his eyes when I drove, you know. And I'm like happy, like, ain't y'all proud of me? I'm having fun.
Right. No. That's the other side of this game.
That's the other side of this game. So now let's talk about that. Like when you tell people don't buy too many cars. How much did the Rolls Royce cost? It did not cost me $107,000. First of all, I didn't buy the Slack catalog. That's worth $100 million. Just that. So the car cost me over $100 million. Okay, it costs. So you got to think, you know, and I'm trying to teach my kids, you know, give them take. I did really well. My best investment of all is that little electric car they came out with, Tesla, you know.
Yeah, I heard about it there on the streets, man.
I bought a whole bunch of Tesla stock, okay? And
when did you do that?
Oh, I did in 2012. A lot of it, like over 100,000 shares, okay? So I sold some shares when it was on its way up because I wanted to build a studio. I wanted to build a house next to my house, put a nice studio in and all that stuff. It cost $2 million. That $2 million of what I sold just to build that, that cost me like $25 million. Right. So you look at it back and you go, if you just waited and not built that,
that cost you $25 million
to put the bill there. Yeah. So everybody looks at the bill, well, that's really nice, man. It increased the value of the house, but not $25 million. It did increase the value of my house. But that cost that. You know, I sold some. I did carefully. I didn't keep all of it. I sold it on the way. I made it, you know, made it reasonable. But had I held just that pill, right, just that one portion.
25.
Another $25 million. Yeah, so I tell my sons, I said, it's not that you, and by the way, you can't count everything like that. Like you said, you got your one car. You got to have some fun.
Yeah.
You're working for, you got to have something to motivate you to go get a nice place. You got to have something to motivate you to go to the next step. But just know that some of those extra little things that you think, oh, that ain't a big deal. I only spent $300,000.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It'll end up costing you more than that.
Exactly. It can cost you, I mean, I got examples of that all day long. Cost you a lot more than that. You think you cash in this to do this, then... Yeah, that went there.
Because the even crazier part, right, just aside from just like the money stuff, right?
Yeah.
And the success and it, in the waves of different times, right, of your successes.
Yeah.
From the Motown days, Barry White to Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, all those things. The way I found out about you was Mr. Telephone Man.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Like you are generations of R&B music.
Right. Yeah.
No, it's a wealth of catalog and a wealth of stories and amazing things. And I remember the first time I heard that record. And I remember what the video looked like and they on the street and the guys got the little telephones and Bobby Brown wanna fight Telephone Man. You know what I'm saying? Like I remember it vividly.
See, for me, that's a screw up.
What?
Yeah. I mean, Telephone Man is a song called A Woman Needs Love, just like you do. Remember the hit I had, A Woman Needs Love, was number one?
I don't know that record. Okay. That record I don't know.
Well, you better listen to that, because that was a huge record.
Okay, okay.
And I didn't like what I did with Telephone Man, which I wrote first. So I changed the move, the music is almost the same. I changed the words and wrote A Woman Needs Love, just like you, with number one record, pop, everything.
Okay.
I just smashed. Then the New Edition heard Telephone Man, which I should have recorded myself. Because, yeah, you know, if you're the star and you wrote it, it's much better than just giving it to somebody else. Okay.
Yeah.
So what did I do that for? So the New Edition did it, and I was nervous and scared. And even when I gave it to Gerald Busby at the record company, I kind of slid under the door and ran out, you know. And he's like, this is the second single. I said, it is? You know, I'm like, oh, my God. You're like, I misread that song. I didn't think that was going to be anything.
You didn't really think anything of it?
No, I told the guys that, too. I said, man, you guys really delivered this one, because I just didn't think it was going to do, you know, going to do that, you know. And it was a smash.
Super smash.
Yeah. But see, I see that as like, more of a mistake. It's like, well, why didn't I? That could have been another one, another notch in my belt. You know, what am I doing?
Do you think, though, okay, so here we go with that from the artist side and the writer side, because, you know, Tank is fully immersed on both. But with me, I've just, you know, I learned early. I forgot who, I don't know who even told me this, but they told me don't fall in love with the records as a songwriter, right? Yeah. They were like, because, you know, your feelings will get hurt. Your feelings will get hurt in this thing by, you know, you're giving away your children in a sense because, you know, this comes from us, right? And so for you, how was that process at times thinking, you know, I see you had a piece of it where you're like, well, I should have kept it. But do you think you at this point, you're a grown man. You might be, what, 30 years old when you wrote Mr. Telephone Man or 25, 19. Somewhere in there? Oh, you were still 19 then?
Yes. I was 19. I wrote Jack when I wrote Jack and Jill and the other songs.
So wait, so this record don't come out for a minute.
It don't come out for almost 10 years.
Wow.
It don't come out till they're almost 18 and 19. Yeah, they're the age I was when I wrote it.
Mr. Telephone Man is 10 years old when it comes out.
Yes.
Oh yeah, so you would have been a kid singing it too, because that was my question.
Yeah, I got
okay.
it. Yeah,
so now it makes more
it.
Sense.
Yeah,
okay,
I got it.
Okay.
I got it. I got
them.
It.
I was them when.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would have been the kid singing it. Yeah,
we got to go in the computer and see if there's some 10-year-old records.
Right. It would have been more relevant if I sang it because cell phones were coming out when they sang it, and it wasn't no party lines and stuff. You know, some of the stuff in the song didn't even exist. Sort of later. All that party line stuff, your mom would tell you, but that's the 70s, where you pick up the phone and the neighbor down the street is on the same line you on.
Got
that's
you.
What that means.
Got
just
you.
So you don't know, we say, this ain't no, I ain't got no party line. The party line is in the old days, you didn't get your own phone line. You shared it with the two or three neighbors down the street.
Man, when I was a kid, I just thought that was something
I
cool
didn't
to
know
say.
What
that
was.
Party line. That means it's going up. Just, it's going up.
It's going up. But that's not what it means. There was really a party line where you pick up the phone and you be cussing out your neighbor like, hey, man, you've been on the phone for a long time. I got to call my friend. I got to call thing. You got to get off the phone. And so nobody had their own lines back in the early, late 60s and early 70s when we grew up. So when you hear party line, everybody knows what I'm talking about who's older. You know, so there's things in that song. Well, not a whole thing, though. There ain't no Mr. Telephone. There ain't no telephone no more.
Right.
So now the whole song is different. You know, but I mean, they heard.
Now, I'm going to play that song for my kids later.
Oh, yeah.
See what they think of it.
There's a kid on MCA named Junior Tucker who released it first. And so the New Edition heard Junior Tucker sound. And he sounds almost like the New Edition. They got that kind of frail, kind of scared voice. And they heard that. And when they met me, they said, look, we want you to cut it. This I'll give them credit for. They said, don't update it. Don't make it sound like the new stuff. Cut it like you would have cut it 10 years ago.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect.
Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You sold the record twice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they said cut it like you would have cut. In fact, they wanted to track from the other kid. They said, can we have that? I said, I'll make it better than that. They said, well, don't make it too better. Just right. Make, we want that old, we need that feel. Yeah. So we get that old feel, and we got our steps and everything we do to it. And we flew a jet down to the Bahamas and saw them perform it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And hung out. And so I cut it just like I would have cut it if I was them.
Oh, my
jet
God.
To the Bahamas.
Yeah, but the song Bahamas. was 8, 9 years old before it came out.
It just keeps.
Before they released it.
I'm stuck.
Yeah.
No, this is amazing, because yeah. The other thing is that we haven't even gotten.
We haven't gotten to the... Go on, get to it. Go on.
So when I was in preschool, there's a picture of me. And I have a shirt on that says, I ain't afraid of nobody. I have a mouthful of silver teeth.
Yeah.
And a t-shirt that said, I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Yeah.
And the only, and that's the thing, like, for black people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For black people, especially. Like, yes, Ghostbusters is a great movie. Mm-hmm. But it's about your record.
Absolutely.
It is about your song. And I'm sure you've talked about this song a trillion times over and over. But while you're here, I just want to say, I'm sure he wants to say,
I am chilling.
Thank
my
you.
Wine. Yeah. Hallelujah.
Thank you for that record. Yeah. Yeah. That record was my childhood.
Yeah. Well, that record almost didn't happen at all.
And why is that?
Because I didn't think that was any kind of music that I should be cutting.
Really?
Right, yeah, and it wasn't supposed to be no record. It wasn't supposed to be any of that.
You had your I'm Too Talented.
This is better than that. The guy who worked with me on Barry White, when I did the songs and I didn't get the publishing, was Barry White was always published by Aaron Schroeder Music. And the guy who was there was Gary LaMille, who's this contact person.
Yeah.
So we worked together in the Barry White days. And then I started dating, years later, I started dating, this is back to this kind of stuff, dating his secretary, Gary's secretary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that hooked me and Gary back up, and he thought I was the right guy to write a song for this film. But it wasn't going to be a song. It was they needed like a 20 seconds of something over the library scene. And the guy wanted to chant Ghostbusters in it. So they let me see the film, and I went,
okay, so I met with the director, and the director started talking about how he wanted the beat to go and all that kind of stuff. Like, that ain't my beat, you know. It's like a rapper, you know, that ain't what I do. That's just not. And my sons are always, that ain't what they do. And I tell them, you better watch that. That ain't what you
right,
do.
Right. Because you may just need to do it.
That'd be you. That may, you know.
And nothing defines that for me better than Ghostbusters. I mean, if you listen to my whole catalog of music and you were familiar with it, you'd say, well, he's never going to write that.
Right.
I mean, that has nothing absolutely. To do with, that ain't his groove. That ain't where he comes from. He's funky and that. It just ain't that. And so, you know, the director told me what he wanted. And then they threw the what I'll call a nice curveball. It says it's only going to be 20 seconds. He says, write us a minute of music, and you got 3 days, and if we don't like it, you keep the fifth. We're going to give you $50,000. You don't like
for
it.
For your time.
No, that's in 1983 or 84. That's a lot of money, $50,000.
Now, $50,000 is, give me that for three. Right. Yeah, you, that,
how
you
about this? $50,000 then, that's like $400,000 now. You know you're going to get some music from me in 3 days. You're going to get something. Well, I don't care what it is. You're going to get something.
Right. Yeah.
So I listened to what the director said, and I came up with a piece of music. I didn't think it was bad. I didn't think it was nothing to write home about, but I didn't think it was bad, you know.
Yeah.
And the voices, all that, I ain't afraid no go. You know, so that was supposed to be the background voices and all the stuff. The director said, I like the way you're saying it. I said, yeah, but what am I saying? I, there's nothing on there. I'm just saying I ain't afraid no go. I'm going to get some girl to sing that. He was like, no, I don't want no girl singing that. I like the way you're saying it, you know. And then he was like, yeah, and he had already said at the meeting, the music's not that important. The movie's coming out in a few weeks. We're in a hurry. Just give us 20 seconds of music and things. Fresh so I only out. Cut, I only cut like a minute of it. Oh I mean, God. There's really, I cut one verse and one chorus. That's it. And so they heard that, and then the director liked it a little bit. So my lawyer drew up a big contract. It looked like the book. And he said, man, did you read what I wrote over the weekend? I said, I don't read more than one page. This thing's like 20 pages. What are you talking about? It's 30, 50 pages long. And he says, if anything else happens other than them using it in the 20 seconds, it's going to be good. That's what he said. It's going to be good.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing to happen is the director called back and says, man, can you make it longer? He says, maybe we should make a record. I'm like, record? I can't make no record of me singing about a thing to a ghost. I mean, I'm the guy in the ladies, man. What are you talking about here? You know what I mean? What are you talking about? Yeah, I'm the man. What are you doing?
But you know what I mean? I don't do that.
I'm not feeling that. Yeah, I'm not feeling that. You know, so we're tossing this around, and Clive Davis didn't really like it in the beginning. And so we're tossing all this stuff around. And so finally, I come up with an idea. I said, well, you know, you got Dan Aykroyd and them guys. And I said, maybe if you get the Saturday Night Live guys in the video, we can curve it and make it go somewhere else.
Yeah,
well, he
yeah.
took that and put everybody in the
video.
Now, he put everybody in the video, you know. And I was like, man, this is crazy, you know. Then all of a sudden he says, you know, we should make it a record. You know, I'm like, record? I really got nervous. You mean like longer? And yeah, let's extend it. You know, so when I was done, we were really nervous, right? The record company was nervous.
Yeah.
I was nervous. And I'm playing this song back who doesn't sound like anything I've ever done before. I mean, nothing. I'm like playing this song back like, man, I don't know if they're going to think I'm a sellout or you know. And when most people heard it from the beginning, they were like, they ain't no Ray Parker Jr. That ain't what we used to hear. You know, that ain't it. Mm. Man, that song came out and just went shh. I mean, I'll never forget. It's the only record I had in my life where the head of promotion called me up 5 days after the record came out. And he says, I'm done with your record. I've closed it out. It's on every station.
In 5 days.
In 5 days.
Something strange.
He said, absolutely. He had all absolutely. The P1 stations. He had all the stations.
He's talking that
anything
talk.
That was
he's
available.
That
anything
your
that was available
on radio. Everything.
Anything that was available to play it on was done in 5 days. He says, I'm done with your record. He said, my guys will just monitor. He said, but it's closed out. And I went, what's that mean? He says, there are no more places to play your music. It's done.
Our job is done.
And it just went like through the roof. And the first thing we knew where it was big, super big, not only was that, but Clive called me up. He says, man, we weren't going to release the record till the movie comes out like overseas, which takes 9 months. Mm-hmm. He says, we've exported 4.5 million records in the first couple of weeks. He says, they don't know what you're saying over there. He says, why are they buying the record and they don't know what you're saying? I said, heck, if I know, if I knew that, I'd cut some more of these suckers, line. You know.
4.5
Yeah. That tagline.
Yeah, that tagline.
Who are you going to call?
You going to call.
Or do I got to pay you for saying that? Cause
And what? That tagline, what was interesting is, I'm like a kid who does his homework late over the weekend, Sunday night, now you got to turn in Monday morning. I had the music because he told me what he wanted for the music. But the part that was going to be ingenious that I hadn't figured out yet was the hard part. How do you put the word Ghostbusters to a song? It was impossible. Right. It didn't sing right. No matter how I sang it, no matter what I did, it sounded terrible.
You couldn't sing it.
And that's why nobody else had it. Nobody else had it either. Yeah. Because he hired Lindsey Buckingham. He hired a whole bunch of famous people to do it before me. I wasn't the first call. They've been working on this for a whole year. And they spent a fortune. And he hated every song. But I looked at it, and I'll never forget what occurred to me. I knew right away, to me, the Ghostbusters were soldiers. So the music had to be stiff. It had to be military time. Yeah. So I knew it was military sound off. Then I saw a commercial on TV about, I think it was Roto-Rooter, one of them kind of things where they have the guys, insect guys or whatever, spray.
Oh, yeah.
And the part of the Ghostbusters movie had the phone number on it. I said, that's it. I got to go Gomer Pyle on these bad boys. Sound off, one, two. So it's a up, two, three, four song. Who you going to call? You know, like a sound off, one, two, three. Even in the back, I go, I can't hear you louder. You know, so it's a military song. So when bands play it in a bar and they try to get cool, it's not a cool song. It's got to be a military song. It's got to be stiff and it's got to be corny. And so you give it that military feel. And then I figured out I can never say the words Ghostbusters.
Couldn't sing it.
I got to say, who you going to call?
Who you going to call? Dan.
And let the crowd deliver Ghostbusters. Yeah. And so
that's all for us as kids. That's we couldn't wait to yell.
Yeah. But all that's by accident. Wow. You know, so then it came out. And so that record now, that is my style. That defines me now. You know, whether I like it or not, it don't matter. Right. That's it. You know, and they, all the kids were happy. And the kids now are still happy, by the way.
Absolutely.
You get some kids that are 7 years old now, and you could have a bunch of us rock stars or whatever, older guys. They'd be looking like, yeah, Stevie Wonder. And then you say, Ray Parker Jr. Then you say, that's the guy that did. Who you going to call? Oh. All this stuff. Hug your leg down here. Take a picture with you.
My kids know the song.
Oh, yeah.
My kids
We just watched the new one.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so the kids hear that song and there's just something in there. They just go crazy. I mean, it works, you know. And so that was the one, you know. Who would have thought that was the one?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I say that all the time. I never call them.
Yeah. And what's funny about that,
I never call them.
I was only here to get the phone call and do all the rest of it because I was doing that song, Mr. Telephone Man. Because my parents were sick. So I was staying in Detroit most of the time. I hadn't been to LA. I hadn't been in my studio. Mm-hmm. Hadn't been doing stuff. I'm thinking, yeah, my career is over. I got to take care of my mom and dad. And it's a good thing I saved my money. I'm going to be okay. So I came out to LA just to do the New Edition. And while I was doing the New Edition, across the street in Spago, there was that black poster with the red. They put in the red circle. I'm like, the heck is that? Then my phone rings. It's Gary LaMille. Can you come down to Warner Brothers?
And how old are you at this point?
I'm 28.
And at 28, you're saying to yourself, my career's over.
Well, yeah, because my parents were sick, and they're telling me to cut a new record. I had no idea for no new record. I ain't cutting no new anything. I'm going to stay with my mom and dad. And they were like, yeah, go see your parents for the weekend, come back. Weekend? Black folks, we didn't do that. I'm going to stay with my parents. If it's 2-3 years, I'm going to stay, you know. And so, so I'm thinking things might be a little over, and God's getting ready to give me the biggest blessing of all. And two blessings at the same week, 2 weeks. First, you come out and cut this song in a New Edition that you didn't like, that you wrote back me as a kid,
And then you write the biggest song of your
life. And then I write Ghostbusters the next week. I'm done. That was only 2 weeks I worked all year. That was those 2 weeks.
Man.
Well, shout out to those 2 weeks.
Yeah. Shout out to those 2 weeks.
Because those are amazing.
Yeah.
So when I come to LA, I had been here maybe 6 months.
Yeah.
I meet you.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you remember this.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
But I'm going to give you the rundown. Damon Thomas.
Yeah.
At the time, He doesn't even mention the Ghostbusters thing. He's like, yeah, you know this. He owns American Studios.
Right, yeah.
Right? Or AmeriCan.
Yeah, AmeriCan Studios.
AmeriRay. Yeah, they started you early with the Rays, with the Stingray thing.
Stingray. And now
you
just putting everything.
You just putting the Ray everywhere.
Radiola music. Yeah. Everything's radio.
Radio. Stingray. Exactly. AmeriCan. Yes. Yeah. So, and I was, for me, before he even said anything about Ghostbusters, I'm 18 years old at the time. I didn't know of any black men owning studios.
Yeah.
And I had been a kid of music and loved music, and I just never knew of anyone. I had been to your studio. And I'm like, wait, he owns the studio? He owns the studio? That's his, right? Like, but this is what you're thinking when you're 18 years old. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, yeah, and it's Ray Parker Jr. I'm like, Ray Parker? Wait, Ghostbusters?
Yeah, Ghostbusters. Right?
So we at Damon's house, and we start talking. And I think I played you what became Tyrese's record, I Like Them Girls, which was the first Underdog record ever. Mm-hmm. And I played you the record, and you were like, I like you. Mm-hmm. I remember this. I'll never forget it. You were like, I like you, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good head on your shoulders, good looking kid.
Yeah.
You're going to make some money in this game.
Right, right.
He's like, I'm going to give you some advice.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking you about to just start running on, running down some other stuff. You're like, get a vasectomy. And I was like,
I told Damon the same thing too.
I said,
he should have listened.
I'm thinking in my head, I can't even spell vasectomy. What is he talking about? But if Breaker Parker Jr. is in here telling me that I need a vasectomy, I'm going to find out what a vasectomy means.
Think about it, right? Yeah.
And then you told me the story, which is long, and we won't go into that, but you told me a story about how getting a vasectomy saved you millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I did it too late. I should have done
and
it
that's too, what you told
a couple
me.
More years earlier. I would have been, oh, man. Yeah.
And that's what you told me.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Well, I can look at him and see he's going to get in trouble.
Oh,
he
just
had that. He had that look when he was younger. You can look at him. That's why I said, good looking guy. I can see where you're headed. I've been there.
I know what you're
I just don't want to touch the Lord's work.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I think if he meant for us to have a valve to cut it on and off, he would have provided it.
And I agree with you.
But there's also people who made rubbers, man. This is somebody who created
I don't know
rubber,
what you're
man.
Talking about. Never heard of it. How about this?
I agree with you. But he also meant for us to do a whole bunch of other things that would have prevented that too, right. That we didn't do.
I think
we're already cheating in the first place.
I think you just gotta be responsible. You know what I'm saying? Your hip game.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You gotta be responsible with your hips.
Yeah.
You gotta get out of there. You gotta pull that piece out of the oven.
Sometimes you get lost in the sauce, man. No,
listen, man.
You hear me?
I know. I know.
How many kids you got?
Five.
How many kids you got?
Four.
You beat me. I got two.
I was at six, but I'm down two.
But I'm
wait, hold on. Hold on. Segue.
Yeah.
How do you go from six to four?
DNA.
Thank you, God, for DNA.
You had a Boosie moment.
They had a Boosie moment.
They had a lot on me.
I'm not the pappy.
I'm not the grandpappy.
The kid is not my son.
The kid is not my son.
Wow. People don't realize Michael Jackson was talking about that early.
Early.
Yeah. About sometimes what they try to do to you.
Listen, man.
Well, so they put two extra kids on you?
Yeah. Yes. And back then, you couldn't swab the mouth. I mean, you know, you had to, like, take care of the kids for 3 years. You know how much that costs?
Before you would know?
Yes. Mama's baby, daddy's maybe.
3 years.
3 years.
Why 3 years?
Because DNA wasn't that developed yet. Well, first of all, I'm lucky they had DNA. Before then, you just paid, period.
So whoever...
It could be 20 years.
Whoever they just said is the daddy, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, if you took a blood test and you were close, you were the daddy.
If you were close.
Were you close?
Not no 98% either. I'm talking about just if your blood type was the same, you the
just
dad.
All happened to be black.
That's right. Yeah, right. You happen to be, The only way you're going to escape is if it's a Chinese kid comes out and you know.
And in 3 years, how much you think you paid?
Oh, hundreds of thousands of dollars. But first of all, you got the initial fight. And you know this. It's not her lawyer. It's your son's lawyer.
Right.
So since it's claimed to be your son, you have to pay for your lawyer, your accountant, his lawyer, his accountant. Of course, he's in a cradle and she's constructing it. You know, she's in charge of it. But you got to pay for all four. So you're down a couple of hundred grand back in the early 80s. But that's before anything happens.
You're down a couple of Rolls Royces.
Oh, yeah. A couple of Rolls Royces, bingo, because they weren't that. They were cheaper then. They were 100 grand. That's two Rolls Royces. You're down four Rolls Royces before you get how much you got to pay.
Oh, man.
Four Rolls Royces.
And then one day you get a phone call that says, baby ain't yours.
No, you don't get a phone call. You got to wait a few years. Then you got to say, everybody's got, you got to hire the lawyers again because you got to get her and the kid to go to the hospital and you take the test. That ain't free either. You got to get that to happen too. So you got to go back again.
Man, I hope y'all paying attention.
Yeah.
I'm not getting over sex. The Lord designed me a certain way. I didn't get one.
He's now married and he's taking an oath to do right.
As long as he does right.
Straight and narrow.
But if you're on the straight and narrow, that means you won't be on TMZ and all that other stuff.
Yeah,
you'll be
good. I'm pull out Cam, piece of hut.
But anything other than that?
I told my kids, by the way, my two younger kids are from me getting the reversal.
Because you put some up.
Oh, no. I just got a reverse. No, you get a reversal. You can go right back to it.
Oh, so you don't put none up for safety?
I put some up because I was scared. You know, I wanted my immortality thing. Yeah. But I didn't use that.
Okay.
I just got a reversal, got married, and had two more kids.
You got back to shooting.
Yeah, right back to where I was, yeah. So guys,
wasn't closed no more.
You don't lose all your bullets. You don't lose all your bullets. It's not over. I'm just talking about putting it in suspended animation for a little while.
Suspended animation.
Save yourself $100 million or whatever you're gonna lose on it, and just take, you know, be responsible, you know.
So, we got a part of this show. We got a part of this show. It's a very important part of this show.
This is gonna be good.
Because you didn't gave us so many bars. many bars that are attached to people, right? Yeah. And we were able to speak the names and speak freely. Yeah. I need you to give us, before I even tell you that, the name of the show, or the name of the portion of the show is called I Ain't Saying No Names.
Okay.
So the story can be either funny or fucked up.
Yeah.
Or both.
Right.
But you can't say
the name of the person.
And they're going to be trying to figure it out.
The guilty party.
Yeah, in case no name.
And some of my people, they're going to know the guilty party.
I mean,
they're going to know.
The streets are what the streets are.
Yeah, it is what it is. You know, yeah. I ain't got no problem with that.
Yeah, cool.
So give us a good one. Give us one.
Oh, you mean I got to create the story?
No, you don't have to create it. You have to tell us the story.
But I'm telling you the story, but I can't say the name.
Can't say the name.
Oh my gosh. Like, which one do we go here?
Just popped up in his head.
Yeah. Well, I can think of a huge record executive.
Okay.
And she's not going to say anything because she'll be busted.
Huh. Okay.
The wife of a. Don't you do it.
All right.
No names. Don't you do it. No names.
Hey, the wife of.
And I didn't do it. But.
You know, she used to call me and wanted me to take her here and take her there. And I'm thinking, holy crap, I didn't know. At first, I thought she was sincere and just wanted me to go somewhere with her. But then I found, like, the opening of a clothing store. What the heck? Why we ain't? Want to go to movies? Whoa. This is going the wrong direction. And if you know anything about girls, you can't really, you know, guys, hey, baby, give me your number. No. Okay, smack. You're done. We used to that. We get to know all the time, but you don't really tell no high price.
You
don't really tell an important high end, high level woman. Yeah, high level woman. No, a couple of syllables went dropping. You know, but I'm saying you don't really. So you got to You got to think about this.
Yes.
Because if you tell, you know, women ain't really, they don't really get into no.
Yeah.
By the time they decide that you're the one, you're lucky to get it. Mm-hmm. And you should be appreciative and thank your lucky stars.
Yeah.
And so you can't just say, no, I don't do that, because that could kill the whole thing too. Yeah. You know, and this person could bury you easily, you know. Mm. And she even said, I'm the one here, forget him. He does what I, you know, I'm here, I turn it. Yeah, what if that went? So
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting here like, oh, crap, I'm about to lose my whole career. Let me see now. How do I not do this? Because I said, there's no happy ending to this story. I mean, it only ends with me getting screwed, like royally screwed. Yeah, one way or another. Yeah. So I had to weasel my way out of there. And I told her my religious beliefs and how much I really wanted to be with her and But it was against my religious convictions, Muhammad Ali style. You know, I said, there's nothing wrong with you, babe. I mean, I'm ready to go. I mean, oh my gosh, I wish I could. Oh, I mean, I just, you know, so I made her feel very wanted and fed her ego the way it needed to be fed. But I did not do the deed, because once you do the deed, that's like signing a contract that you never read the contract. You know, it's a million pages, you know.
Right.
So I didn't do that, but that was a dangerous one.
Wow.
I remember thinking, my life's going to be over. How did I die before? How is this going to happen?
So did you ever in your mind think, well, if I knock it down the way I'm supposed to knock it down.
If I knock it down the way I'm supposed to knock it down, I'd be dead, completely dead. Yeah, I thought it. That's the other thing, too. This was one of those situations where if I took it down the right way, then I'd be 100% dead.
Right.
By the time, you know, if it went that way, then the husband found out. I mean, he was in a whole nother group. I'd be out of here.
Yeah,
that'd just be it. We just put him in the desert with the rest of the folks. Put him in the backfire in the desert. Put him in the
buried under the sand.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. He went to dinner with me, shook my hand, came to my house, ate dinner, and he's doing my, put him into that, bury him in the back.
And you don't mess with nobody's wife.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Lead a man's
wife. Shout out to self-control. Shout out to religious beliefs. I think religious beliefs.
Well, that's what I said.
It's always an excuse to get out of something.
Yeah, yeah.
The Lord don't want me to do this.
That's right.
I want to do it. I promise you.
Me and the devil want to do it.
Me and the devil.
I'm not going to listen with him. I'm not going to go with him.
And confirm blowing your back out.
That's right.
With the Lord.
And it ain't fair to you, man. I don't want to be unfair to you. What kind of person would I be if I treated you like that?
Oh, my God. The R&B, the game.
Listen, he had a top 10 record called The Other Woman. So, you mean?
Yeah,
you mean? Hey, listen.
What happened right after that? Shit. Oh, man. Listen, my brother. Sir Ray Parker Jr.
Yeah.
I've been messed up.
Yeah.
I've been messed up. I'm a talker. But I have been in class taking notes from this session.
Thank you.
Being able to sit here with you. This is the best. This is the best.
Well, this is fun. I'm having a good time.
We truly honor you and appreciate you on a level that you probably will never understand, because we are here because of you.
Yeah.
And this platform, all these lights you see, all of this, it's because of you. So we thank you wholeheartedly for giving us your time, brother.
Thanks, man. And can I give a little message to the young
sir?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay, look.
Whatever you want to do. Hold on.
Y'all don't get crazy with this stuff. But get you a little real estate. When you see all that Amazon and Apple and all that stuff, you ain't got to buy all of it. Just get you a little bit of all that stuff and just put aside. Get some cryptocurrencies, even though I don't understand why you can not buy this with this currency. You can buy this with that. Oh. Just get a little bit of everything. You really don't need a lot of it, but just have a little bit of everything. Because if one of them things takes off, and one will surely go if you have a bunch of it, that could solve all your problems, just that. And if you want to get more sophisticated than that, that's a whole nother conversation. Mm-hmm. But just make sure you have a little bit of everything. I wish I'd done more of that. Just a little bit of everything, you know. Sure. And when that takes off, man, you'll be shocked, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the money I'm talking about, is when you get your first Porsche, you don't have to buy the second and third one. Take that money and put this something else in. Yeah.
That is a lesson from Sir.
Sir Ray Parker Jr.
Ray Parker Jr. I'm Tank.
I'm Jay Valentine.
And this has been the R&B Money Podcast. Come on,
here we go.
I like it.
I like it.
Shit.
R&B Money.
R&B Money is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Don't forget to subscribe to and rate our show. And you can connect with us on social media via @RnB Money Podcast or @TheRealTank or @JValentine.
AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear. This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Viking. Committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.